This interview is with Mrs. Emma Fowler, who lives at 927 Henrietta, Kingsville, Texas. The interviewer is Melvin Bohannon. Mrs. Fowler was born in West Texas on March 31, 1896, and lived most of her life on a farm. Mrs. Fowler lived in West Texas until she married and moved to Kingsville in 1935. During this interview, Mrs. Fowler relates her experiences while living on a farm in West Texas. She describes her move to Kingsville and what Kingsville was like in the 1930s and 1940s. Ms. Fowler, can you start off by telling us a little bit about your background, where you were born, and your early childhood, and then just bring it on up to the years and what you've done in your lifetime?
Oh, I certainly can. I remember my first days in school. I was 8 years old when I started school, and I can just vividly remember my first reader that I had. It was called The First Reader, and I remember the first lines that I learned to read was "The hat was on the box," and I loved my teacher, Mrs. Andrews was her name, and she came riding each morning on a little Spanish pony. That was about the only way people traveled in those days. Our schoolroom was a large room with a large big-bellied stove. On cold days, we children gathered around the stove to dry our shoes and get all warm, as we all had to walk. Years later, we had a tall man named Mr. Cobb. He also rode a little mule. Each morning as he arrived for school, he had some boys draw a bucket of water from the well and have them pour it on his head. We used to ask. He said, "Oh, that's to keep me well." And we girls used to just gather around, and we just couldn't understand why he poured that water on his head. And his shoes, we couldn't get over that. He'd wear his shoes. One day he'd wear the right on the left and the left on the right. Next day he'd have them changed around. Oh, those were the days. And another thing he did was, he, in the winter time, when he had a cold, he would hark and he'd spit on the stove, which we just, we children just couldn't understand that.
Spit on the outside of the stove?
Yes, he just spit it on there, just spit it on the stove, and it just cooked there. Oh, my mother would just think that was awful when I'd come home and tell about that. And then the next thing I can remember is during Christmas. We had always had a Christmas tree in our little church, and my father and my uncle would hitch up four mules or horses to a wagon. Because in those days, the roads were awfully muddy, and we always looked forward to our Christmas program. So we children all gathered in the wagon with my uncle and with my daddy. My mother never could go because her health wasn't too good. But nevertheless, we went to the Christmas program. And my daddy, we always had a big Christmas tree with a lot of candles and goodies on it. And my daddy, being the deacon of the church, had a long stick, and he had always had a wet rag on it, and that was to prevent a fire. When the little branch caught on fire, he would take it and put it out. And then the Sunday song, when we'd go to church on Sunday, we always looked forward to our days to go to church. Our shoes were brought out, and they were polished, and our clothes were gotten ready to go to church. And those were days that we looked forward to going to church on the Sabbath day. And my daddy, being the deacon, the way we did our tithing in those days is he had a long stick with a black pouch on it, and it had a gold braided tassels all around it. And he would pass it through the pews, first to the men and then to the women. And that's the way we drop our tithings in this black bag. And my daddy was, I can remember, he was a deacon as long as I can remember, even after I got married. He was still the deacon of the church. And then I must tell you about our life on the farm. We had lots of chores to do. Since I was the oldest one, I started doing the milking when I was, my mother taught me how to milk when I was about 11 years old. And during the time when we had to go and help my father gather the crop, well, we had to get up real early of a morning. We would get up at, we'd get up around 4 o'clock. And we'd go to my second oldest brother and I did the milking. My oldest brother fed the horses, and my two sisters were too small to help, so they stayed at the house and helped Mother. And Daddy would help my oldest brother feed. And I remember it was up so early in the morning, and the calves wasn't there. So my brother would say, he says, I think I'll just lay here in the loft and take a little nap. And sister, you get the calves. And away I'd go to the pasture, and it was dark, and I was frightened. And if I could see a calf and get a hold of its tail, I'd never turn loose till I got to the cow lot. And I didn't. I just hung on to that calf's tail, and we did the milking. And for that time, Mother'd have breakfast ready, and by 5 o'clock, we'd be ready to go to the field. And by 6 o'clock, why, we had a lot of cotton in our pick sack at that time. And another thing I can remember, my grandmother stayed with us, and at about 10 o'clock, we could see her coming with her buttermilk pie. She always had buttermilk pie for us during the summertime. It was fun to go out there in the field and really pick cotton and see my grandmother coming with a buttermilk pie. That was our lunch. And besides that, we'd always take a big red apple. We always took a big red apple to school, in the field. And that was our lunch. And it was always up to me to carry the water jug. We'd get thirsty and they'd say, well, they draw straws, who's going to tote the water jug? And it always fell to me. I don't know why, but I always have to carry the water jug, bring it around, you know, because it was covered in, my daddy had covered it in gunny sack, you know, and it stayed wet, and that was the way we had our water to drink. But that, we were half a mile from home, so we had to, that jug of water had to do. And may I call you by your name once in a while?
Yes.
Oh, and another thing, Mr. Bohannon, was I recall when I was, I must have been about 12 years old, when my mother was going to, we were going to have chicken for dinner that day, and my father killed the chicken before he went to the field. Mm-hmm. And he brought the chicken to the house, and my mother put the water on the stove, and I brought in the bucket to scald the chicken. And as Mother scalded the chicken, my baby sister had a potato that she was going to cut up. And so my mother says, better take the knife away from her, honey, and because she might cut herself. And as Mother picked the chicken up out of the bucket, scalding water, and put it on the table, well, my sister, at that time, I was just taking the potato away from her. Well, she backed up and fell in the bucket of scalding water and just doubled up in it. Well, it frightened my mother so bad, she picked her up out of water and laid her on the table with the chicken. And at those days, we had vinegar, and it came in a big, big jug. And she said, gather the oil cloth up, and let's just pour all this vinegar on her. And that we did. And We let her lay there for a little while. My mother jerked her clothes off of her. And I got a blanket, and we wrapped her up in the blanket. Then we had no telephone. We had no way to tell my daddy, but for me to run out in the field and get my daddy while my mother was taking care of my little baby sister. And he came home. In the meantime, he comes home and says, I have to saddle his horse and go ride 2 miles to town to get the doctor. And I started praying. I believed in prayer in those days, and I still do. And I just picked my little sister up, and all the while I was carrying her, I was praying. And by the time the doctor got there, well, she was sound asleep. Well, he laid the little thing on the bed and looked at her, and he said he had very little hopes for her because her burns on her little chest, and she was frail to start out with, were so deep that he said he would do all he could. Well, then came the days when we had to bandage her wounds, take the old wrappings off and put salve, whatever he gave us, to put on. And that's the time when I started praying again, because every time my daddy would pull off one cloth, well, the blood, she just bled all over. It was just horrible. But you know, my little sister lived, and I think it was just simply with prayer. I really do. I think that's what it was. Well, then as I grew older, then and grew up, we enjoyed our Sundays. I guess it seems different to people this day and time. But our Sundays were spent going to the neighbor, and they had an organ, which not very many people had. And we'd all gather up, my cousins. I had 3 cousins that lived close by, and since I was the oldest, and they would take me, and we'd go and have a singing. And all we sang was just church songs. We didn't know of anything else. And I'll tell you, Mr. Buchanan, in those days, I would have died to see anybody see me barefooted. Because we saw someone coming, if we was barefooted, why, we'd run to get our shoes on anyway, if nothing else. And that was these are some of the things that I can still remember. And one more thing about farming, how we farmed in those days. My daddy didn't have any way to broadcast his wheat and oats, so he fixed him a bag that looked very much like an old book satchel that you hung around your shoulders in olden days. And he would reach in there with his hand and get a hand of oats and just scatter it around, and he would walk. Well, it'd take him 2 days to plant, because he planted about 12 acres. I know we had one field that was 12 acres, and it took him quite a long time to do that. And Lord, it was sometime in the winter, it got awfully cold up there. And I remember one time my brothers, they went down, we had a large tank, and my brothers went down to skate on the tank. So they came to the house, and they said, oh, come on, Emma, come on down and go skating with it. I said, oh, no, it's too cold. My feet will get cold. Well, my daddy had some wool boots that he put on, and then he had the rubbers to go over. So they got my daddy's boots, and helped me put them on, and I walked down to the tank with them. And one was on one side, one on the other. Well, they were going to teach me how to skate. Well, I skated just about halfway across the tank, and I fell down. Sat down so hard, and it really did hurt. I just got up, and I says, well, okay, now you all do all the skating you want. I'm going home to Mom and Daddy. I was always a Mom and Daddy girl. I guess because I was the oldest, they'd always call on me. And my daddy, when he plowed, he always had to walk behind the plow. But then later on, he was able to buy a plow, and he always had 4 horses hitched to it. And oh, I'll tell you, he always fed them, and they were so frisky. And I'll tell you, Mr. Bohannon, it would just scare me to death when I'd see my daddy getting ready to go to the field. Because that plow was so, it looked so little to those four big horses. And that's another time I'd start in. I'd just stand there and I'd just watch him, and I'd just stand there and pray. You know, of course, my mother, who was, she never was on the outside very much. But I would be out there to see if there was any way I could help my daddy. And he'd get started and going out to the field. But then before we had this plow, he had to do all his planting walking behind a planter. And this was just filled with one horse. Just had a little bucket of a thing on that carried the seed. And you'd go up and down the row and plant your seed that way. But then later on, then after we had the riding plow, he got him a riding planter. He was able to get a riding planter. And then as years went by, my uncle and my daddy went together and bought the implement that you could plant oats and whatever wheat you wanted to plant, or sorghum seed. And it was called a drill. It was real. It must have been about, 12 feet long. It was a box, and you'd fill it full of seed, and you'd get hitch your horses to it, and you'd take it up and down the field, up and down the road. And oh my, that was really something. And then I think later on they got a thing they called a roller. And it was heavy iron, and it was wide too. It must have been about 8 or 10 feet wide, maybe wider than that. And then they would roll the ground after the seed was planted. Mm-hmm. They'd roll always field, and that's to keep the moisture in there so the grain would come up. Mm. So those were different days than we have now in picking cotton. Right? Children nowadays, if they'd have to get out and do what we did, well, they wouldn't know where to start. We had this long bag, it was made of cloth. We called it ducking in those days. I don't know whether you can even buy it anymore now. I just don't know, because it's been so long ago. But it had a band on it, and you slipped it around your shoulders. And you'd go up and down the middle, and you'd pick cotton. You'd have to pull it out with your hands and put it in this sack. And we'd always wait till we had about 40 or 50 pounds, and then we'd sling it over our shoulders, over our back. We girls the same as the boys, and carry it to the wagon. And the wagon was usually about middle in the patch. Or maybe my daddy didn't want to drive up in the field, in the cotton patch. And he put it on a little side road. And then it was weighed and hoisted on the wagon, which was a long bed, tall and high. And when it was full, there was about 500 pounds on it. And then it was ready to be taken to the gin, to be ginned. Let's see. There's just a whole lot more that it takes a little time for me to think about all these things.
What did you do, Mrs. Fowler, when you were still growing up, you know, from picking cotton?
Well, one of the things I can remember, I had to go to confirmation school. I think I was about 14 years old. Mm-hmm. And I'd have to hitch, my daddy would hitch the horse up for me. And I had about 7 miles to go in a, by that time we had a buggy, believe it or not. We had a buggy but didn't have any top on it. I remember one day I started out and my daddy gave me a cover for the horse, covered the horse up, and I was all bundled up. And I had these 7 miles to run, to ride to the church house where I studied my, or answered my questions for confirmation. And it started sleeting. And I was covered with sleet and a little bit of snow. Well, when I got there, I had to, I unhitched my horse. I unhitched old Prince, and I put the cover on him and covered with a blanket. It was a blanket, because my daddy didn't like for the horses to be cold, and Prince, he was such, he was, in fact, he was the horse that my daddy used when he courted my mother. When he used to court my mother, he'd take Prince along, and he'd let mother ride Prince, and he would ride the other horse called Lucy. And my daddy had those horses till, well, Lucy finally died. She died before Prince did. Prince was 24 years old when he died. Mm-hmm. And that's an old age for a horse. And oh, how I loved to ride Prince, because he was a riding horse, and he could sing a foot and foxtrot. And I wonder if you folks now know what it is to ride a horse that can sing a foot and foxtrot. And my saddle was a side saddle. It just had one little horn. It just had one little horn on it. Did you ever see a side saddle?
Yes,
you know what it's like? And you took your foot around, your leg around it, and my mother fixed me a long black skirt. It was all full, and I was all covered up when I was on the horse. And I remember the first time my daddy put me on the horse. He says, hold on. He said, I'm going to hit him with this little switch. So he hit him with a little switch, and then he just started off just to sing a foot or a foxtrot, whatever he did. And I had these 7 miles to ride horseback, and sometimes I'd go in the buggy, but most of the time I'd have to go horseback, because it was in the winter time mostly.
You were telling me, Miss Fowler, the other day about the old farmer would sit around the big old pot-bellied stove.
Oh, yes. My, this is something that I think is really true. I don't believe in fortune telling or anything like that. But in the wintertime, the farmers would go to town, and it was always so much fun for them to get together, gather around the stove and talk about the crops and talk about how the family was. And maybe it was January or February, in those 2 months. And it would start in thundering. And one of the men got up and he says, boys, this means hail in April. And what is the date today? Well, they figured that they'd see the date in February. And just at the same time, it hardly ever did fail. It would hail in April the same day, like maybe it was the 4th of January or along in February. And they put the date down, and it would nearly always turn out.
Because of the thunder.
I imagine it was. And another thing is about, like I told you the other day about the full, like when the moon is full, about the hurricane. That this old man, he must have been in his close to 90. And he told Mr. Fowler, Mr. Fowler, you watch for the full moon. And we saw all this cloud on the horizon. And he said, when the moon is full, he said, that hurricane will come in. And it did. It really did. It did an awful lot of damage.
Which hurricane?
It was, goodness knows. Tar was about 2 years old, so that would be about, and he's 38 now. That would be about in 36. I mean, no.
Thirty-four.
Yes, because he was born 32, and that was 34. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Fowler worked there in the garage. And from there, we were going, he found a better job in Dallas, but that didn't materialize. So then he came down here to Kingsville and got work here at K.A. Childs. And then he brought the family down here. We at that time, we were still staying with my mother. And my brother brought us down here, pulling a trailer with all our belongings that we had. And we first lived on Lee Street, and then we saved our money up, and we had $500. And then we had a depression year again. And we took the $500, and Mr. Presley built us this little house that we're living in now. We only had outside walls. My mother and daddy came down to visit us, and my daddy says, now what did you pay for this house? And he said, I says, well, I think $500. I think that's the agreement that Latay made with Mr. Presley. And he was looking at the house, and he says, oh, honey, he says, you don't have $200 worth of lumber in this house. It was so full of knot holes that you could see the sun during the day and the moon and the stars at night. And we had, we were really poor in those days. We had three children, and we had one heater. In fact, they still had the heater. And we had this, in this front room, we had a tub, a wash tub, where we had to take our bath, and that took the house to take a bath and heat the water on the stove. And so I through that, going to church and believing in prayer. And he still kept on working. And then he got, we never did buy anything on credit. The only thing, Mr. Bohannon, we ever bought on credit that I know, we just did without, was Electrolux icebox. We just had a little icebox, and my little grandson, he says, what is a stopper in the floor for? I said, well, that's where our icebox used to sit, our little icebox. Of course, we were able to have ice all the time, then it wasn't like a home. So that's...
Ms. Powell, can you describe this area around here in Kingville when you first moved here, what the streets were like?
We didn't have... This was just... You just couldn't possibly believe what this looked like when we moved here, and that's been 35. We've been here about 35 years. When we built this little house, there was just an old broke down wire fence, and the front yard was a great big hole there, kind of like a gully. And I remember I took all the scrap lumber and put in there. And Mr. Fowler, I said, now you buy me a wheelbarrow. And I said, and I'll clean the place up out while he was working. And the children were going to school there. Darcy and J.L. were in school, of course, because I was too little. And all this, Lantana here, well, you could just see to the college. I remember Mr. Fowler and I, we used to get his binoculars out and look around at the college and, look around the country. And then some man came in then later on, but that was way years later. And we just had this one neighbor over here, Mr. Rawlinson, and that's where we got our water. He let us hook on. That's where we got our water and our gas. We got, by that time, we had gas too. And but then we didn't have a bathroom till. So we lived here a few years before we ever added on to the house. But we all, Mr. Fowler always bought so much lumber, and then we'd fix one room at a time, but we never did buy anything on credit. Then finally, they tore a hotel down in Corpus, and he went and got the whole fixings for a bathroom. He got the commode and the lavatory and a big old-fashioned tub. And we had a bathroom. And that was luxury then. That's really the first bathtub that we had. We lived all through the years just bathing in a tub. With the exception of the first, before the Depression, when we lived in West, we had a bathtub there, but it wasn't in the house, it was out in the wash in the laundry room.
You were telling me the other day about when people got sick, particularly when they got real bad cold or flu or pneumonia, and they used the onions. And
oh, well, this was when my husband's younger sister was born. I must tell you that. She was just a real frail little baby, and she took pneumonia, and so the old doctor told my mother-in-law, said, well, I've heard my mother-in-law tell that story so many times. Said, well, there just wasn't a thing that he could do. And he says, Miss Fowler, you get you a bunch of your lady friends and get you a sack of onions, and you peel them and slice them. Put them on the stove and just fry them where they're good and hot all the way through. Lay them between some flannel. And be sure and test it on your teeth before you put it on the little baby's chest so you won't scar her. Well, you never saw the like of her friends, the red cheeks that they had. They certainly didn't eat any rouge. And I know my mother-in-law used to say, my father-in-law used to come in and he said, I never saw a nicer bunch of women. He said, my, don't they look healthy. But he said, but Clotilde lived. She's living to this day. And about the only thing that we knew in those days, and another thing that was good for carbuncles, was Jimson weeds. We call them Jimson weeds, but now down here they call them moonflowers. Mm-hmm. And they're just beautiful. Have you ever seen them bloom?
I don't recall.
Well, we just call them Jimson weeds. And I know when I went from here, I went up to Mother and Daddy, and I was going to have J.L. and J.L.'s tonsils removed. And in the meantime, I took this carbuncle on my hip. And we were out in the country with my mother. So my mother said, well, she says, do you want a doctor? And I said, well, I didn't bring any money to have the doctor come out here. She says, well, I'll take care of it. So she went out in the garden and got a big handful of Jimson leaves and cut them up real fine and made some cornmeal mush and put those Jimson weeds in the hot cornmeal mush, and she put poultice on my hip. Mm-hmm. And she put it on there, I think, for about a week. And by that time, it was time for me. I had an appointment with a doctor in Waco to have J.L.'s tonsils removed. Well, when we got to the office, the office girl looked at me and she says, my goodness, Emma, she says, have you been sick? And I said, yes. I said, I don't know whether you call it sick or not, but I said, I want you to look at my hip. She says, oh, my heavens, you need to go to the hospital, child. You have a carbuncle. And Dr. Whitty came in, and Dr. Whitty looked at him, and he said, we can't remove J.L.'s tonsils. You won't be able to take care of it. This has to be taken care of first. And he put something in there to kind of kill the pain. And he got his little kidney-shaped pan that they use in the hospital to spit in for when you have your tonsillectomy or anything like that. And he got this little scoop and he starts scooping the pus out. And when he got through cleaning that thing up, you could easily put that doorknob in it.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about pain. And I had to go for treatments. But I just went once or twice. And then my brother-in-law and my sister, who lived out in the country, out from my mother's, not too far, he said, he was always a great hand of doctoring. He loved to doctor people. He and my sister taking care of it. They had to cram it full of gauze about every other day. And it was about as big around as a saucer.
Miss Fallon, I have a few more questions before we go on. Let me turn this thing over here.
Okay.
These Jimson weeds.
That's all we knew in those days. And Miss Bohannon, they were wonderful. Mm-hmm. They really do. In those days, we didn't know too much about medicine. Medicine really didn't start till after the First World War, and and then of course the Second World War, then they used all kind of methods. But in those days, that's all we used. And I remember when I was just a big kid at home, my mother told my brother and I to go get a chicken for the noon meal. And we got after this chicken, and it got on top of the hog pen. Mm-hmm. Well, my daddy was always real particular about his hogs. He always had a floor in his hog pen. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty tall building. It was as tall as my workshop out there. Mm-hmm. And my brother says, "You get on top. You crawl on top, and I'll catch him when he comes down." And I did, and when I jumped down, I jumped into a board with a nail in it. And I took nail, board and all, and ran to the house with it. And it was board, must have been a foot long. And my brother in behind me, but he caught the chicken. And my father pulled the nail out. It just nearly went all the way through the heel of my foot. So he just sharpened his pocket knife, and it dug all the rest out. And soaked it in turpentine, and that was about the only thing we had to doctor people in those days, was turpentine, or mostly turpentine. Mm-hmm. And my foot swelled up, it was, oh my goodness, I had a foot, it was, you couldn't put it in a circle. But we never did go to the doctor. I don't remember that we ever went to the doctor for anything. The only thing, I think, and in those days we used to have sore eyes. People don't have sore eyes anymore. I remember when I wasn't too old to grow up, but I remember when my daddy had sore eyes, and I remember he ran outside the yard and got down on his knees and covered his face up and just prayed to the Lord to please relieve him. And I can't remember that we used anything, but I think someone went to the doctor for my daddy, for my mother, and they got slippery, I believe they called it slippery arm bone. That's what they called it. And you put it in water and boil it, and it gets real soft and slimy. And they would take, it was bark, it was pieces of it, and when you cooked it, it got real slimy and soft, and as warm as you could stand it, you just lay it across your eyes, across your face, and that relieved him. But that's something we don't never have anymore, now this day and time. But I remember I wasn't too old. My baby sister was still small. But for some reason, I can't remember that we ever took it. But we did have the whooping cough. We had the whooping cough when we were little, and we took the whooping cough all at one time. But that was before my mother had her last baby. They were just four of us children then.
Before we talk about I understand that you sold milk and butter to the.
Oh yes, I had yes when we first moved here in this barn out here. I had two Jersey cows, and I milked as much as 10 gallons of milk at one time. And I had, I churned butter. At that time, we had the service men come out here, and the commander, his wife came out here and got cottage cheese and cream for whipping cream. And she got butter and got her milk, because the base was restricted from Velvet Jersey at that time. And I remember Doris was going, how come he find that out at first, before I met any of the commanders or any of the officers out there. We met him through Doris going with his boy. And I served him. He came out here to eat, and I served him milk to drink. He said he just loved milk. But before he touched it, he asked Doris, he said, where's this milk from? And she looked at him, and she said, oh, it's clean, she said. Anything that my mother fixes is clean. He says, well, he said, I just wanted to know, he said, because we're restricted from the base. And said, oh, my mother has her own, we have our own cows. So then he went out and he saw the cows. And we had one cow that we had, and then later on we bought another cow. And I later sold that one to Dr. Northgate on King Ranch. He brought Jersey. Oh, I hated to part with my cows. And I'd take them out, and when we had the first cow, I would go by this officer's house where Miss Gustafson lives now. And I'd take her to stake her out, and he'd say, and Mr. Duncan would say, come right quick, the circus is passing by. I would be leading the cow, and behind the cow was the dog, and behind the dog was the duck, and behind the duck was the cat. And that happened every morning. The dog would go to the cow lot with me, and he'd just sit there and make nancy. Half of the time we'd go to make nancy, sit up, and he'd sit there by the cow till I got through milking. And the cow never did bother him. He never did bother the cow. But that duck had always, we called him Ducky Boy. And him and the dog, and we had a big cat, and they'd all go with me to stake the cow. And these people always thought, they had one little girl, and it just thrilled her to death. And he'd always say, come on, right quick. He'd call his back, the little girl, the circus is going by.
Miss Fowler, I really appreciate you talking to us, and giving us the opportunity to learn about your background and your life and what it was like, you know, living around the West and Waco and Kingsville, Corpus around this period of time, and I'm sure that we'll all benefit from this tape, and I really appreciate it.
Well, I've always enjoyed living here in Kingsville. It seemed like I was on the farm petting my cows, it seemed like. And I used to have chickens too. I had a lot of good fryers. Always had my own chickens. And always had the officers' wives come out here, and there was one, a Mrs. I think her name was Campbell, and they lived over here in Lantana. I think I can remember what house she lived in, and she made her little tank. Her husband had to go hunting, and she had him to dig her little tank out there. And when he crippled a wild duck, they never did say anything to her. She had her little tank out there and her wild ducks. And when they get, and after they get well, then maybe she'd have them from 1 year to the other. But then when the next year came, and the duck was able to fly, and some wild ducks go by, or geese, mostly geese, it would pick up and leave. And she'd always come over here, and she'd say, oh, she said, Estelle, I lost one of my geese today. And they would just, you know, they would just follow her and fell along. She used to love to come over here and sit at my table and eat. And she'd never get her king plate. She'd always get Tara's plate because Tara was their favorite. He would go with Mr. Campbell. Mr. Campbell would take him out on the shooting range, I guess that's what they call it, shooting range. And he came by here on his little army truck and picked Tara up. And he would take Tara with him. And 1 year she bought a turkey. And she didn't know what to do with the turkey. So she bought him. She bought one for Thanksgiving. And she said, Miss Fowler, I don't know what to do with my turkey. He's used to sitting in a tree. And I said, well, honey, bring him out here. And we brought him out here and set him in this big mesquite tree here. And on the night I'd get up, I'd have to watch. Because we didn't have no fence. I'd watch to see if the turkey was still there. And every morning then, she'd come get him and lock him up, but at night, but she'd bring him out here, let him roost in the tree. It's just still.
Miss Fowler, thank you very much.
Oh, you're just real welcome. And they took all the osier, what they called the osier at that time. And they took all the, where the big bridge is now that goes to Portland, they took all of that away. All the railroads was away. That was one of the worst ones we've ever had. And at that time, we lived in Corpus at that time, and we lived in an apartment, and they took all our, we had beautiful morning glories, and it took all of that off. And that's about all I know about the first hurricane that I ever was in this part of the country.
Did you meet Mr. Fowler around Waco? Did you meet him?
No, I met him at Waco where I was born and raised there. Mm-hmm. And in those days, right, girls from the farm, they liked to go to town. They liked to live in town for a little bit. And I'd always look through the newspaper. Girls wanted for housework. So I asked my mother one day, I said, I would like to go and do this. Well, no, they said, no, my daddy always said, I'll give you some money. I said, no, I'd like to do this on my very own. So I wrote this lady a letter, and she said, well, you come on in, and I'll look you over and see if I like you. Well, she took a liking to me, and her name was Mrs. J.W. Polly, and her husband was a salesman for armor plate hosiery. That's been years and years ago. And I did all the housework, I did all the washing, I did all the ironing. She didn't have a washing machine, but she'd always managed to get one from the store and try it out. And she did that for 2 years. And she never did buy a washing machine. And she had two little children. The little boy was old enough to go to school, the little girl. I know she must have had about 12 or 14 little dresses. And she was just a perfect little doll. And she'd say, Miss Emma, may I go in and change my dress? And I said, yes, honey. And I'd let her change her dress. Well, when wash day came, they were putting in the wash. And when wash day came, they were all putting the laundry, and I had to iron them. And I'll tell you, they were the hardest things to iron with the big iron, because that's many little ruffles. So I told Miss Polly one day, I said, I wish they made some little irons where I could iron these little ruffles better. I can't do a very good job. She said, well, I'll try. So she really found a little iron. And I know Mr. Polly always said, now you fix the best gravy that I ever did taste. If you ever get married, Miss Emma, you just send the boy to me and tell him what good gravy you can make. And oh, that was fun living in town. I had my own room. And oh, that was really something.
How did you meet your husband?
Well, I'll tell you how I met my husband. He was working at a filling station, and my brother, we always bought our gas there. My brother came home one day, and he said, Mother, can I bring this boy home? And she says, what boy? Oh, he works there at the filling station. And he's living in Waco. It's 18 miles to go. There was 18 miles between West and Waco, the little town where we live. And he said, my mother says, well, you just let me know so I can have a good meal. But that was about the only time we ever had steak. The other time we always had ham, because we always had plenty of ham. And mostly our meat was ham. So he brought Latane home. His name was James Latane. And he brought him home, and we didn't think about him bringing him that very day. We had forgotten about him. And we girls were out in the field with Daddy picking cotton, and we had the boys over also. And my heavens, here he brought Latane there in the field, you know, and introduced him, you know, to us girls. And we went on to the house, and I slipped in the kitchen, and I told my mother, I said, oh, I never was so embarrassed in my life. I said, with these overalls on. I said, I didn't want to meet him with overalls on. And now look what I'm wearing now. Now I'm wearing slacks. at this. But I said, that was, Lord, that was years and years ago. And that's the way I, and then we, we knew one another about 5 years before we got married.
Can you tell me about from the time after you got married and I guess when you moved to this area down here from...
Well, Doris was born. In fact, this was a coincidence. Doris was born out at my mother's. There was a depression. In the meantime, we had a depression. And my husband lost his job at the filling station where he worked. So we had to go out and we had to stay with Mother and Daddy on the farm. And we were expecting our first baby. And she was born in the same house, in the same bedroom where I was born. In the, yeah. And then we went to Waco and stayed there, and he tried to get work there, and he couldn't get work there. And then we had to go back and stay with Mother till he finally got a job again. And then we lived there till, we had my second child was a little boy. And he by that time, my husband had found work in West again where we live. And later on then, we had another depression. And that's when we came down here, this part of the country. And that's when he worked in Corpus. And those were real bad days for us. Because he was only making $12 a week. And our rent was $18 a month. And I don't think we could have survived if it hadn't been for my brother and his wife for helping us. Because he had a little garage. He hired Mr. Fowler to work in the garage. But he could only pay him such little amount. And I remember we didn't even have money to buy ice at that time to last us all the week. We would buy a block of ice on Saturday and put it in and go to the grocery store on Saturday night. But it would only last till about Wednesday. And I remember the children were playing and they came in and they were hungry and they wanted to know if I could fix them a sandwich. So I fixed them, I think I fixed them as well as I can remember, a peanut butter sandwich, but there was one slice of meat left. And I ate the slice of bologna and took ptomaine poisoning from it. And I came very near dying. I know Dr. Giles came out and he felt on my pulse and he said, well, I couldn't even feel it. But I got over it. And then from there we moved to Alice and we lived there. And it was hard to get a house there, but we finally found a little house. But there was a kind of a oil boom going on at that time.